The headlines read that this young man was viciously attacked by an alligator. Wound up losing part of his hand and a little bit of his foot. The story's made up. I just happened to find that picture and thought that it was a good picture to use to introduce the discussion this morning. Again, remembering that this is all made up, the headlines were young man viciously attacked by an alligator, and the next day they saw this picture in the paper. Yeah. Anybody in the audience done anything like that? Maybe not quite that stupid. I have. I've made some awful decisions in my life. I've made some decisions that I wish I could have back. I've made some decisions that I knew were going to lead to some consequences, some things that I didn't really want to happen, but I made those decisions anyway. And you know, the decisions that we make, just about all of them, fall somewhere on that grid, don't they? We make big decisions, we make little decisions. Some of them are good decisions, and some of them are bad decisions. And about all that we can hope is that we avoid making a lot of decisions that fall down here in those two cells along the bottom of that grid. We read this morning about Lot. Lot made some really bad decisions when you think about it. And the decisions that Lot made turned out to be a big deal. Now, I don't know whether his decisions would be classified as big ones or little ones, but Lot's choices, Lot's decisions that he made in Genesis eventually wound up in a kidnapping. Now, we read about that in Genesis 14, beginning at about verse 1. It came to pass in the days of Anaphel, the king of Shinar, Arok, the king of Eleazar, Shalotimer, the king of Elon, and Tiddle, the king of Golan. I hate reading all those names in the Old Testament. I sometimes, when I read this on my own, I get to those names and I go, and I just kind of skip over that. But you got to try to pronounce them when you're going to stand up. They made war with Bera, the king of Sodom, and with Bersha, the king of Gomorrah, Shinab, the king of Adna, and Shinabar, the king of Zeboim, the king of Bela, that is Zoar. All these came as allies into the valley of Shittim, that is to say, the valley of the Salt Sea. 12 years they had served Shalatimar, but in the 13th year they rebelled. In the 14th year, Shalatimar and the kings that were with him came and defeated Rephaim in Ashtaroth. Let me just skip down here to about verse 7. Then they turned back. They came to this other place, and they conquered the country of the Amalekites and the Amorites who lived in, and the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah, the king of Adnah, the king of Zebulun, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. They came out. They arrayed for battle before, against them in the valley of Siddim. Against Shalatimar, the king of Elam, and four kings against five. That's where we want to be. The valley of Siddim was full of tar pits. The kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. They fell into them. Those who survived fled to the hill country. They took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all of their food supply, and they departed. And then there's this statement. they also took Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions, and they departed because Lot was living in Sodom. So Lot winds up being abducted by these kings who have decided to come and fight, not necessarily with Lot, but they've decided to come and fight with Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, even before this kidnapping, Lot had to deal with the oppression of ungodly men. Lot apparently is a man who wants to serve God. But he's made this bad decision, and he went and he pitched his tent towards Sodom and Gomorrah. And then in 2 Peter, the second chapter, beginning at verse 4, Peter describes the situation, and he uses Lot as an example that we should learn something from him. He says, if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly. And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes and having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter, and if he rescued righteous Lot, who is oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, that man Lot, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. You see, Lot had to live in Sodom and Gomorrah. He was a righteous man, and it was an unrighteous place. And that was hard for Lot. Even after Lot managed to get out of Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot continued to lose a lot. We're familiar with the two angels that came to visit Lot in Genesis, the 19th chapter. Now they come disguised as two men. They said to Lot, who do you have here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters, whatever you have in the city, bring them out of this place. We are about to destroy this place. You can understand that. God is not going to allow this kind of wickedness to just multiply, and eventually God gets tired of it, and he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. But he wants to get Lot out of this place. Lot went out and he spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters, and he said, up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he appeared to his sons-in-law to be jesting. When the morning dawned, the angel urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you'll be swept away in the punishment of this city. But he hesitated. So the men seized his hand, and the hand of his wife, and the hands of his two daughters, and the compassion of the Lord was upon him. They brought him out, put him outside the city. When they brought them outside, one said, escape for your life. Don't look behind you. Don't stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, or you'll be swept away. Lot said to them, O my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You've magnified your loving kindness, which you've shown to me in saving my life. I cannot escape to the mountains, for the disaster will overtake me and I'll die. Now behold, this town is near enough to flee to. It's small. Please let me escape there. Is it not small that my life may be saved? He said to him, behold, I grant you this request, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there. I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the town was called Zoar. The sun had risen over the earth when Lot came to Zoar, and the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. He overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But his wife from behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. there are these pillars of salt all over that area. He wound up losing his wife. He lost all of his possessions. Eventually committed incest with his daughters. Lot made a terrible decision. And you could have predicted what was going to happen, but Lot didn't think about it. We make a lot of decisions too, don't we? And it turns out that the biggest decision that we make is whether we're going to choose Jesus or not. Matthew, the 11th chapter, at verse 28 beginning, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm weak. I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." We're confronted with a choice, and that choice leads to, on the one hand, a disciple's life. This life that we're called to is, well, Peter describes it this way. You've been called for this purpose. "For since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example to follow in his footsteps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth, while being reviled, he did not revile in turn. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to the Lord who judges righteously." So, as a disciple, yeah, you're going to make a decision. And as a disciple, there may be some suffering that's associated with it, but let me stop here for just a minute. No suffering that happens to a man who is a disciple happens because he chooses to follow God. God will not hurt you. No suffering comes as a result of what God does. Where does the suffering come from? There is suffering. Where does it come from? Wesley, I think, nailed it. The suffering comes from people who don't like God. It comes from the people that are around you. Someone was talking about the persecution of the Jews during the days of the Nazis. Somebody said, how can you even think about not blaming God for allowing that to happen? And the person that was answering the question said, "God didn't do it. Wicked men did it." So yes, you're called to a disciple's life, and that's a life that's going to mean a lot to you. And sometimes there will be suffering associated with it, but the suffering will never come from what God does. And beyond this life, you're going to know the disciple's eternal reward, or a disciple's eternity. Matthew, the 6th chapter, Jesus says, "Don't store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." What a shame to have decided that the most important thing in my life was to buy a black BMW, only to have somebody break into it and ransack it. Now, I'm not saying that buying a black BMW is a decision that's like Lot's decision, but we understand the things that we work so hard for here, the things that Lot worked so hard for, were not permanent. So we're faced with a decision, and one of the good parts of that decision is a knowledge that no man takes away from us. No man, by his persecution, destroys us. We have a home with God in heaven. So there's one decision. We get to choose our careers too, don't we? in Matthew, the sixth chapter. And at verse 33, Jesus said, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness," and all these other things that he's been talking about, clothing, raiment, clothing and the things that you need to live this life, these things will be added to you. So we get to make a decision. It's a lifelong decision, for the most part, about the career path that we're going to choose. It's not always cut and dried. I've chosen two different career paths. Chose one, followed it, decided to choose another career, followed it, and then went back. And now I'm back with the first career path that I chose. By the way, it's so good to see Pete here. Pete's known me for a long, long time, and you need to be careful about the stories that Pete tells you. Because he has a tendency to exaggerate just a little bit. He took me flying one time. We landed, thankfully, because God was watching out for me. We landed, and Pete looked at me and said, "Well, I'll give you one thing. You're not afraid to pray out loud." Well, we get to choose our careers. Watch out. Choosing a career is a big deal, and you have to be aware of the money trap. You don't choose a career just because that career is going to make you a whole bunch of money. 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter, beginning at verse 6, the apostle reminds us godliness is actually a means of great gain when it's accompanied by contentment. "We brought nothing into this world, we will not take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into a temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which pull men into ruin and destruction. The love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith, and they have pierced themselves through with many griefs." It's a big decision. We get to make a decision about our mates. Proverbs, the 18th chapter, the wise man said, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing, and he obtains favor from the Lord." I can't tell you how fortunate I am because of the blessings that I have, because of who I'm married to. Somebody was talking about their wedding and who they had chosen to marry, and he said, "I wanted to marry that woman because I knew if I did, my chances of going to heaven went way up." Most of us guys would have to say the same thing. A wife can be a tremendous lifelong blessing. Look, Proverbs, the 12th chapter at verse 4, "An excellent wife is the crown of her husband. She who shames him is like rottenness in his bones." And a wife can be a lifelong curse. Now, you understand Proverbs was written by a man, so he always writes about his wife. Wives probably feel the same way about their husbands. I'm not a wife, so I don't know, but I can probably guess that Kim would also say it is better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious man. That's Proverbs, the 21st chapter at verse 19. She would probably say it's better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and a vexing man. Hopefully I'm not that. But I think we understand what a good thing a wife can be. And we also understand what a hard thing it can be when you've got the wrong one. We get to choose our friends. Proverbs, the 12th chapter, verse 26. "The righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray." A good friend is a loyal helper. Something you can't find anywhere else. Proverbs, the 17th chapter at verse 17, a friend loves at all time, a brother is born for adversity. There are good friends who stand beside us no matter how difficult it becomes. And what a blessing it is. And they can be a terrible influencer for evil. 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. We get to make decisions. Sometimes we make good ones. Sometimes we make bad ones. Tonight we're going to talk about what happens when we make bad ones. Now, and we've all done it. We've all made bad decisions. What then? What remains? We're going to talk about some things that I think are important for us to realize. There are things that are very important for me to realize because I know that I've made some bad decisions. And I could have foreseen the consequences of my bad decisions, just like I could have foreseen the consequences of Lot's decisions. Just like I could foresee what was going to happen if you Instagram it and put your hand in the mouth of an alligator. Now, there's some evil things that happen that aren't a result of bad decisions that I've made. And I can't do anything about those. But I can deal with the bad decisions and the consequences that follow my bad decisions by trying to make better ones. If you're here this morning, you get to make a decision. It's a decision you get to make every day. Am I going to follow Jesus? Am I going to be one with God? Or am I going to fight against Him and decide that I'll live my life the way I want to live my life, and no one, nothing, not anything that anyone could say is going to dissuade me from a path that I have chosen? Or you can decide to put on Christ, put on God. It'll mean a lot to you. We want to help you put Him on if that's your decision. Nobody can make it for you. You have to make that decision all by yourself. It may be that you've made bad decisions. You recognize those bad decisions, and you can't wait to come back tonight because you've got to find out how to deal with the bad decisions. So we're going to talk a little bit tonight about David and Absalom. Absalom made some awful decisions. So did David. We're going to talk about how they fixed it. If you're here and we can help you, we want you to let us know that we can help. We're going to stand, and Rod's going to lead us in the song that he's selected. It'll be on the board in front of us, Bring Christ Your Broken Life. We want you to think about it while we stand and we sing the song together.